Hello, hello. Welcome back. How are you doing, my friend? I hope life is treating you well. Today, we are talking failure. I have the life coach Lydia Bai with me today. Lydia is fascinated with failure. She will explain that a little bit, but she's passionate about helping women in tech deal with overwhelm and stress, get back to that high performance, which I'm so passionate about. Enjoy what you do. Enjoy your accomplishments. And we're talking today about failure and failure as a cost to our motivation, failure as a way that we hold ourselves back, our relationship with achievement. She talks a lot about her early career and how her toxic relationship with achievement that stems from her childhood really impacted her ability to thrive at work. And we talk about burnout. We talk about having realistic expectations. I try and link it to imposter syndrome and fear of failure from perfectionism. And we just have this beautiful conversation about how we need to realign our thoughts around failure. But Lydia isn't just a life coach. She was a Stanford D1 athlete. She refers to herself as a recovered investment banker and an actress who starred in an Oscar submission for Best Foreign Film as well. Show us a little bit about that on the show. This one's fairly unique. And because of that, she's got a fairly unique take on failure, motivation, purpose, and self-confidence. So without further ado, let's get Lydia onto the show. Welcome to the Leading Women in Tech podcast, the show that celebrates women in technology leadership. I'm your host, Toni Collis, and this podcast is the result of my passion for building better tech by diversifying the leadership of the technology sector. Join me on this journey as I discuss all things leadership, what it takes to be innovative, breaking through the glass ceiling, be a great leader, and how to navigate the unique experiences we face as women in tech. So sit back, grab your headphones, and get ready to be inspired to become a better leader. Welcome to the show, Lydia. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Toni, for having me. I'm so excited.
Absolutely. Well, start off with sharing with us all your career journey, the highlights, those all important lowlights, and how you came to be so passionate about helping people with failure, because that's the thing we're going to be talking about today. Helping people deal with the failure, the burnout that comes from that. Where did this spark come from in you?
Yeah, where that spark came from is basically towards the end of my career, I realized that I had a low sense of motivation and purpose when it came to work. And I really wanted to understand why I had those feelings, where I came to kind of that part of my career. And I think it really just came down to there was just so much overwhelm and stress related to work. And I couldn't pinpoint where it came from. And what I figured out was that it was more just over time how I had perceived failures throughout my career, small or big. I kind of generalized it and believed in this pattern that, you know, I wasn't good enough, or that happened because I'm just the person who isn't great at details. Just some very kind of deep-rooted thought patterns of who I was and also like what I thought about work. And really, I also want to talk a little bit about kind of where I learned about my relationship with achievement and my relationship with failure. And I think it really just kind of starts with a little bit about my background is, you know, my mom, she is a 4-time Olympian. She won a gold medal as a player. She won 3 medals as a coach, and she won gold as a player and a coach for volleyball. And I think why I bring that up is because growing up, I kind of was in this environment where people automatically treated my mom with respect because of her achievements. And even though she never overtly told me, like, In order for people to like you, you need to be very successful and high achieving. She never overtly said that, but it's definitely something that I learned along the way. And so basically, like when I was in high school, I was going through stuff at home. My parents were going through a divorce. And how I dealt with that stress was that I became hyper-focused on achievement. Like I got all the good feelings from, you know, being really good in class, being really good at volleyball. And so I ended up getting a volleyball scholarship to Stanford. And I never really looked at my relationship with achievement and how focused I was on setting these high expectations for myself. And I think I really came to a turning point because once you go to college and once you kind of go into the workforce, you can't sustainably set these expectations higher and higher because inevitably you're going to fail. And I didn't really have a framework or kind of even what to do when I began to fail more and more. And I think that's something that, you know, I think a lot of people can relate to. And that's sort of what sparked my journey with understanding, you know, this quest for achievement, why it's there, and also, you know, what we do when we fail and why we take it so personally.
It's a fascinating set of backgrounds and something, although, you know, not all of us have an Olympian as a mom and got a volleyball scholarship to Stanford. Congratulations, by the way. I think so many of us can empathize with some of that story. And I certainly hope the listeners do actually, because I've heard so many times over the years how there is this toxic relationship between I am only worth the gold stars I have on this list, these set of achievements. And it's crippling. It's really crippling. We don't believe that we're capable of anything if we don't have a gold star, which fits in perfectly with where we're going to come to around failure. Because failure becomes so detrimental to us. Tell me a little bit about your personal career then. And you know, you mentioned right at the beginning there that you had this sense of a loss of motivation and purpose. You weren't wanting to do it. So how do you see that all tying together? Like what happened that meant you realized that you weren't passionate about work, you weren't enjoying work anymore, I'm putting words in your mouth here, and that it was related to your relationship with achievement?
Honestly, what happened was something totally out of left field. I was asked to be in a movie. And so I quit my job. Or I didn't quit my job. They gave me a kind of sabbatical for 3 months. And I was transported to China on set with a director, an acting coach, and other kind of actors as well. And it was just such an amazing experience. It was not glamorous at all. It was there was like porta potties, all of those things. It was like in like farmland, but it was just such a basic sense of motivation. What I'm doing matters, and we're all in this together, and I'm in a very supportive environment. And that was just what was so amazing about that experience. And so when I came back to my desk at San Francisco, it was kind of that moment where I realized that the level of purpose that I felt on set in China was so different than what I felt at work. And I'm not saying that everyone should have that experience. But what I also learned is that I think I had associated so many things with work that there were so many of these like perceived dangers and threats that I kind of, you know, interpreted at work. And how I view it is that work is just what it is. It's just this environment where you do work things, you have deadlines, projects, you work with coworkers, you deal with people. And I think the most important piece of that equation is sort of you, that you are the processing apparatus, so to speak. Like you, your past and your interpretations, what you believe about yourself, that is what really shapes your experience at work. And I think that at that point in time where I realized I really had that lack of motivation and purpose, I think my processing apparatus, my brain, me as a person, I was so dialed into like really just believing that I wasn't good at work. There was just so many things, but that's all I was really focused on. And it was becoming really painful to keep going back to work just because my brain was like, this is some place where you're consistently feeling not motivated and you talk badly about yourself and you're reinforcing these negative beliefs. Why do we keep going back there? And it's this push and pull between, well, you know, work is kind of cool, but you're kind of fighting with yourself because the reality is, you know, you haven't, or I hadn't really processed kind of, what am I interpreting all of these things that are happening at work that are very normal and that they should happen, like mistakes, you know, missent emails, I spoke incorrectly at a meeting. All of these things are very normal and they should be normalized. But to me, they felt like really high stakes and that it was just further evidence that I didn't belong in the workplace. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty devastating to repeat to yourself all of the time.
Yeah, I mean, I see this a lot with women I work with where there is this complete disconnect with their jobs. They're burnt out, they're stressed, they're unhappy. And a large part of it is there's something that means they're not aligned. And so much of it comes down to, I don't believe I can do this, fear of failure, which we're going to come to in a second, or doing work that they aren't passionate about because they're afraid of failing at the thing they actually want to do. That is something that manifests a lot. And it creates this internal tension when we aren't really aligned, when we aren't enjoying what we do, we don't believe we can do it, we don't believe we're making a difference. And especially when we think we shouldn't be there, that imposter syndrome, this internal tension, I swear, that is the biggest source of burnout, that and the ambition gap where we aren't taking action because we're afraid of where our ambition will take us. Those to me are the two biggest sources of burnout for women in the workplace. I don't know about men, don't work with them, might apply to them too. I'm sure it does, but I just, whether it's the two biggest causes, I'm not sure. Is that kind of like where you're getting to here? Is this constant tension internally and the damage it causes us at work?
Yeah, definitely. And I really liked what you were saying about being aligned. And that tension, that misalignment is really where a lot of the kind of, not pain, but where a lot of the conflict comes from. And what I would also add to that, absolutely, is it sounds very simple, but what comes to mind right now is just to lower your expectations. Mm. When you were talking about the ambition gap, I want to also add that, you know, how I view kind of failure is that gap between expectation and reality. Mm-hmm. And the thing is expectation is something that we set ourselves, whether it's, you know, from our environment or what we've learned, but it really is within our control. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the examples I want to give that also touches on how failure is also a perception is that, you know, when I was an investment banking analyst, I had this main belief that, you know, I was the only analyst in the female analyst that was in the office. And so when there were these, we had our Monday morning calls, the boardroom is just full of men and all the other guys that I worked with. And I just felt inherently uncomfortable. And so what I thought was, oh, if I am just a stellar analyst, if I achieve like all the things that you can do as the best analyst ever without any mistakes, then I could feel like I belonged and then I could feel comfortable. And what that kind of created was that every time I made a mistake, the stakes were so high because it meant that when I made a mistake, that I couldn't be comfortable in the workplace or that I couldn't belong or that it was further evidence that I didn't belong there. And just, you know, putting that aside, the example I want to give about failure being an interpretation is that I had made a mistake in a presentation. One number was wrong, and I thought that it was the end of the world. And I thought that because of that mistake, I could no longer be the star analyst. I could no longer feel like I belong. It meant that I was just not fit for this and that everyone else would also perceive me in this way. And then basically from then on, I just built on this narrative that I'm just not good at this. People know how bad I am at my job, just something similar to that. So it really affected how I presented myself in the workplace, how I viewed, you know, my work. And what was so interesting is that, you know, last year I had lunch with one of my, you know, past coworkers in banking, and she was working there when I was an intern, so we didn't really overlap. But when we were kind of talking about our past experiences, she was actually a star analyst, and she actually was kind of the well-beloved analyst in her kind of year. And she shared with me that she actually made a similar mistake to me that I had made in my presentation, where one number, it was like the exact same category, leverage finance, that one number was wrong. And it shocked me because I had perceived that mistake as being career ending. Yeah. Like I perceived it as like so defining of my career. And she just mentioned, yeah, I made that mistake. And I mean, it felt bad, but I mean, I had so many other things to check and like make sure we're correct. I didn't really think it was, you know, that big of a deal. And so just getting that confirmation and that literal concrete example that these failures, even though this one was the exact same one, can be interpreted in so many different ways and can really affect how you perceive yourself. And sometimes you don't have to take it that seriously.
Well, you said something really interesting there about failure being perception, like it's open to interpretation. And I want to dive into that a little bit more. Like, explain to us, how is failure something that is just perception, just an interpretation of events? Explain that a little.
Yeah. So how it is just a kind of interpretation is you have kind of, we mentioned that failure is kind of, there's an expectation and then there's reality. And the gap between you actually meeting your expectation actually happening, that is kind of this failure gap. And that failure is the gap between the two. And so, for example, like what that would mean is that, you know, you expect that this kind of, you know, maybe I'll use an example from my analyst years in a startup, but basically you think that this operating plan is going to be perfect, that these numbers that you present to the board or to management, they're final, they're good, they're golden, double, triple checked. And reality is that you probably made one mistake somewhere, right? And that was reality. And your expectation is for it to be absolutely perfect. And that gap between what actually happened and what you thought would happen is failure. And that's really up to interpretation, because you can easily just set the expectation as, you know what, it's a lot of work for one person to make sure that all the numbers across 11 different businesses are absolutely correct. Like, that is just such an unrealistic ask. And just lowering that expectation for myself, for yourself, and being like, I can have a few mistakes. Honestly, the difference between those two scenarios and how they feel is a huge game changer. And I think that is just probably one thing that I wish I could have done, you know, in my past work experience, because then I wouldn't have made it mean that, you know, I'm just not good at this type of work, or, you know, this is why I'm different from this other coworker. You know, whatever I would extrapolate and try to make meaning from, I wouldn't have to do that. And I also wouldn't add on to things that I believed about work, like, you know, I'm just so tired, this stuff is meaningless, why am I doing all of this stuff? And I think that's the most detrimental part about failure, is that we kind of really repeat these harmful narratives about what we believe about ourselves and what we believe about work. And I think, you know, just how failure is an interpretation, like what we think about ourselves and work is also an interpretation. And so I think it's just opening the conversation to challenging all of it, challenging our expectations, challenging what we believe about ourselves, and challenging what we believe about work. Because like the main person or the main party that's being hurt is you.
Yeah.
Like you are the one that is being affected by all of this.
Well, something that really struck me there was the link between this set of expectations, imposter syndrome, and perfection. Because as you know, and for listeners, I hope you know this. If you don't already, then stick with me. One of the key causes, not the only cause, but one of the key causes of imposter syndrome is perfectionism, this obsession with we have to be perfect. And it's unrealistic, actually, as you talked about in your example there. And I do wonder if there is a strong correlation between a fear of failure and imposter syndrome. I never heard anybody put it like that before. But given that perfectionism is one of the core attributes of imposter syndrome, what causes imposter syndrome, do you think imposter syndrome is actually partly caused by a fear of failure and not knowing how to not fail, basically?
Yeah, I really do think that those are related. I really do think it's because of each person's experience with achievement and failure and expectation and, you know, that being successful just feels good. Mm-hmm. And when you're not, it doesn't feel good. Just really going back to that basic thing, we want to do everything we can to avoid not feeling good. So we want to do everything we can to like avoid making mistakes and not feeling like we belong.
Yeah. I mean, and that fear of like making mistakes and not belonging like keeps us stuck. I mean, and that causes its own special form of stress and burnout, like, which is what I think you're partly experiencing from the sounds of it, where you're scared to do things because you're afraid of the failure. So you stay here. And that in its own right is causing stress because you're unfulfilled and unhappy.
Yeah.
Not doing what you think you're capable of, but you're so afraid to take a step. And I think that causes its own special form of burnout. Which brings me to my next question for you, all about burnout. I know addressing burnout is one of your passions. So particularly in this context of failure, burnout, fear of what's going on, most people think that the only thing they can do is quit. And I know you and I agree that that is not the best solution. Very rarely is quitting the right way to deal with this. In fact, I think it causes its own form of burnout for many, not everybody. What do you think we should be doing instead?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think going back to that sort of little framework I was talking about where you have work as your environment, things that are happening, you have other players, and then there's also the processing apparatus, which is you. It's more looking at, you know, one solution is not to just change that one side of the equation, which is your work environment, you know, quitting, getting another job. Because the one thing that hasn't changed, even though you've changed your work environment, is sort of the processing apparatus of how you interpret things. And what I mean by that is, you know, we haven't done the work, and this is the solution, doing the work of understanding what are these beliefs that I hold about myself and about work, because I will continue to look for evidence to support that in this new environment, because I have repeated this narrative so much to myself that I do think this is part of my identity. That sounds pretty intense, but it really isn't, because if your identity, you know, if we talk about it from a philosophical point of view, if your identity is just the majority of the thoughts that you think about yourself and how you interact in different environments and how you present yourself, then it is a pretty safe assumption that if you believe that you're being undervalued, if you believe that you're being underutilized, or that you're not a great public speaker, honestly, any of these things and however they manifest physically in your environment, that is kind of your identity. And I think we have a say in how to change that because of neuroplasticity. Like, we have science to back up that we are elastic, that we can change. And I really think that that is super exciting. I really hope that that kind of gives some motivation and hope for a lot of the listeners that, you know, we have control over how we present ourselves at work. Yeah. And I think sometimes there isn't enough space or enough conversations about that.
100%. We have complete control. You're right. We need to have more conversations about that. Well, I do want to ask you one very, very important question, because I know this is a passion topic for you, is to help people look at their failure differently. What is the one thing you want every woman listening to this podcast to start doing differently today?
I think, you know, one of the things that I would like women to take away, women in tech, women working to take away, is really to kind of begin to create awareness on separating work and how you interpret things. And I think one kind of specific way to tackle that is to really think about the last time you failed. And I think really viewing failure as information, as like the key to understanding what you think about, what you believe about yourself and what you believe about work, is probably the most important thing. And it's really just information. And so how I would kind of frame it is, you know, look at that failure. What was your expectation? What was reality? And take a look at that gap. It's just similar to everything that we talked about. And I would like to add one more thing, is just to take a second and create awareness on how that feels in your body. I think, you know, when we're in the rat race of completing this on time, going to this meeting, going there, I think just taking a second to slow down and just think, okay, how do I feel in my body? Am I very activated? Am I having a strong physiological response to this one thing? What is going on? And I think just slowing down and looking at that is just so important.
Yeah. Yeah. I always say to people, slow down to speed up. Whether you're working on your executive presence, whether you're trying to do a great strategy, or in this case, trying to step away from burnout, you need to slow down, have awareness of yourself and the situation. Only then can you speed up, right? It's just so, so important. Oh, I love this conversation. I could talk about this all day, but I have my favorite quick fire questions for you. You ready for that?
Yeah.
Okay. My favorite question of all time. What is the worst piece of advice you've ever been given?
The worst piece of advice is to just not take it seriously, or as in, like, whatever this person said, they didn't mean it. I think that is kind of the worst commentary I've received throughout my career.
Interesting. Tell us a bit more about that, because I think that's given sometimes, because as an antidote to being concerned, but like taking things really personally and stuff, like don't take them seriously. I kind of know where you're coming from, but tell us a little bit more about that. I know it's quick fire round, but I can't help myself.
Yeah, no, totally. That can be totally interpreted in so many different ways. What I meant is, you know, I would be uncomfortable with what a guy said at work, or like I was uncomfortable with how this person gave me feedback, or just like it was very uncomfortable. And then people would just kind of say, don't take it seriously. It's not that big of a deal. And I just accepted it because I didn't want to kind of question, what the heck are you talking about? That was not okay to say.
Okay.
And so, yeah, just feeling like I couldn't speak up in a lot of situations. And that was really frustrating.
That to me is actually really dangerous as well, when we're told to basically don't worry about it, keep your head down, it's not a big deal, when it is actually abusive, sexist, racist, anything is almost, or and just unacceptable behavior, toxic behavior of any form. To be told that you don't take it seriously is, it's a form of gaslighting, and it's wrong.
Yep.
It's really wrong.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh.
Exactly. Just small doses of poison
every day. Like, it's the death by a thousand tiny cuts, right? It's wrong. Mm-hmm. Well, let's flip it around. What is the best piece of advice you've ever been given?
The best piece of advice? Oh my gosh, Tony, it's hilarious, but it's also to, none of this really matters. It's just different sides of the spectrum, but.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's like, don't take life too seriously. I want to leave the world in a better place. I'm here to change the world. I'm more so here to have fun. So I kind of, how much does it really matter? What is the last book you read and would you recommend it?
The last book I read was, it's like a sci-fi book. It's called Gideon by Tamron Musin, I think. But it's just a great book about necromancy and dark magic.
Oh, I'm a big fan of a little bit of sci-fi, so I'm gonna be checking that one out. And I will make sure there's a link in the show notes if anybody's interested in that one. The first thing I do whenever I finish recording one of these is I like go and like have a look on Goodreads, like, what's this book, and put it in my wish list. I get so many great book recommendations from the show. It's great. What is your favorite mindset tip to help women who listen to this podcast adjust how they act or think, particularly on failure, as that's what we've been talking about today?
I think that the mindset tip is kind of the next time you fail, just evaluate it on three things. Is what did I do well? What didn't I do well? And what will I do differently next time? And just evaluate yourself on those three things every time. And leave all the rest.
Yeah. Oh my God, it's so similar to three questions I ask my clients, whether we're working on executive presence, we're working on interview technique, just leveling up their self-awareness. Like, what went well? What didn't go well? What would I do differently next time? I'm like, just like all the time, I'm asking those three questions. Ask yourself that all the time. Such great questions just to like bring yourself back in. I love that as a mindset.
Exactly.
This has been fabulous. So how can people find out more about you, what you do, connect with you, chat with you? Where do we find you online?
Yeah, so just connect with me on LinkedIn. My name is Lydia Bai, and I also have a website. I will also have kind of the worksheet. I'll have a worksheet made for listeners of this podcast on how to kind of reframe failure, exactly what we were just talking about, expectation, reality, what we make it mean about ourselves and about work. And it's just going to be on my website, lydiabai.com/Tony Collis is the external link. And I'll just have this guide available for listeners.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for sharing that. That's amazing. I will.
Yeah.
That link will be in the show notes. So when you hear listen to this, you want to go get that, go check out Lydia's website. Lydia, thank you so much. Is there any final thoughts you'd like to leave listeners with today?
I think final thoughts is I hope you have a great day. And when you get home, maybe just make a nice cup of tea and show yourself some love.
That is so beautiful. What a beautiful, I've never had anybody finish an interview like that. That's such a beautiful way to finish. Thank you. Have a cup of tea. Show yourself some love, ladies. And remember, as always, until next time, stay on your tech leadership game. Follow your dreams, because the world really does need that uniqueness that you bring as a leading woman in tech.